It's time for Caffeinated Comics, a lively discussion and debate on comics, film, television, and collectibles, all fueled by the magic of Frappuccinos. Caffeinated Comics is sponsored by Chimeras Comics. Chimeras is your one stop for comic books, graphic novels, hero clicks, Magic the Gathering, and more. Explore the fantastic at Chimeras Comics. Now, here's your hosts, John and Steven.
Thank you. It's Caffeinated Comics. I'm your host, John Clark. With me, as 92% always, is my co-host,
Steven Brown.
And this is that time of the summer. We are a couple of weeks away from San Diego. We are a couple of weeks from most of the big movies.
Yeah, we're a week away from Ghostbusters.
Yep.
Suicide Squad, I think, is like 3 weeks away or 4 weeks away or something.
Yeah, Star Trek is a couple weeks away.
I just keep forgetting that Star Trek is.
So do I.
You know what I finally did? Star Trek comes out what day?
I think it's on the 22nd.
And this is like our America's Birthday podcast. Happy July 4th, everybody.
Right, it's 4th of July weekend. And we did, a couple of years ago, we did a big Captain America 4th of July patriotic.
We had Stu here for
Yeah, Stu was here for it. I think it was after, it was early, so I think there had only been the first Captain America film out.
Oh, that's something.
What?
Since we don't really have a topic.
No, we don't have a topic at all, so we may discover one.
Yeah, I just discovered one.
What?
This is, 10 minutes maybe. So remember how everyone lost their fucking minds when Captain America was a Hydra agent?
Yeah.
All right, so the second issue of that has come out.
Okay.
Do you care about spoilers?
No, not at all.
All right, so this is going to be spoilery for like the next 20 minutes or something. I don't know. If you're listening to this and you don't know about spoilers, you know.
I very rarely read Captain America. So honestly, if you tell me something really good happens, you'll get me to read the book rather than spoil it.
Right. So this guy, Nick Spencer, writes this book. Mm-hmm. And he did like Superior Foes of Spider-Man, which I
loved.
Highly recommend to anyone who hasn't read that book, because it's they don't do comedy books anymore, and that was a great comedy book. It was so good.
And there's an omnibus out now.
There is, the whole collection. It's really sweet. I actually own it. It's wonderful. So this dude writes Captain America, and he's been writing Captain America for a couple years because he was writing the Sam Wilson Falcon Captain America.
Right.
Captain America, right? So last month, he does the issue where Captain America says, like, Hail Hydra. And, like, everyone loses their minds. And, like, the internet goes crazy. And Marvel's, like, completely caught off guard about it. The guy's getting, like, death threats. So the second issue comes out, and it's revealed that, remember they were doing that standoff, like, assault on Pleasant Hill? It was supposed to be, like, the prequel to Civil War. I don't know if you knew they were doing this.
In Captain America?
It was like 3 or 4 issues, and it was like a series of one-shots that was like an Avengers crossover.
Yeah.
Whereas basically, so S.H.I.E.L.D. had a cosmic cube they were keeping from the public. They did that the public wasn't aware of. And they were using the cosmic cube. They were going to rewrite reality. Well, Captain America finds out about it, and he goes like nuts and shuts it down. Well, they then take the program and build a prison called Pleasantville, where they take super criminals, put them in the prison, rewrite their personalities to be like a gardener. And the prison's this like little town called Pleasantville. So that was like the plan. Well, Red Skull, whatever, comic book bullshit comes in, and the whole thing goes to shit. Baron Zemo's running around. They break all the villains out. The Avengers show up and shut it down. This is the story that took Captain America, who was like an old person, and de-aged him and gave him back like the formula.
Yeah.
And it was done by like a sentient cosmic cube character called Kobik. It's like a little girl.
Okay.
Well, she is like super obsessed with Hydra because she was like mind control raised by like the Red Skull, who still has the brain of Charles Xavier. If no one has any idea what I'm talking about, this sounds crazy, but it's actually been great.
It sounds like deep continuity.
It is.
And I'm at a point in my comics reading, as I've said before, where there's so many goddamn Batman books, and they're twice a month, that's 80% of my budget. So
that's all you'll be able to keep up with.
All I read from Marvel right now is
Iron Man,
which I don't like, and the one Iron Man, I didn't even pick up that second Iron Man.
That wasn't good.
And I read Amazing Spider-Man, which is also twice a month, and I read Spider-Man Deadpool, because it's really fun. Because
that's supposed to be super great.
It's super great. It's Joe Kelly and Ed McGuinness.
Yeah, and I'll give you the nostalgic of the two of them being back on like a monthly.
It's not even
Deadpool
nostalgia. Those guys are still
I'm saying like, them reunited on a character that like made their careers is like really sweet.
So, but yeah, basically, I'm nowhere near Avengers, which is where all of the continuity of Marvel is
around now, which is frustrating.
Especially since there's no Fantastic Four.
Right. So, but basically, so the Cosmic Cube girl rewrote Cap's history and inserted the Hydra stuff into his history.
Okay.
So he wasn't the Hydra agent, but he is now. And then de-aged him to, like, quote-unquote, fix him and make him, like, the best version of himself. Because in her mind, the best version of somebody is, like, you're a Hydra agent. You love Hydra. So anyway, this comes out, and the internet, again, doesn't lose its mind quite to the level.
No, I didn't hear about it. Number one, we heard about all over the place where we had to grab Elliot Serrano and bring him in just to cover it.
Yeah, and then we had to rub his belly and give him a chew toy just to calm him down. So, like, he's great. So basically, all these idiots. Oh, so then people are online saying Marvel, they couldn't even stick to their crazy story because of the fan backlash. They changed the story, which is very frustrating because instead of any of these news organizations that run these articles about Captain America, right, where they have like some guy that doesn't read comics, they can't just grab like the 22-year-old intern in the office and have him write it where he actually knows about this shit. Comics are done like months in advance.
Yeah.
That number two issue was finished before number one hit the stands.
Right. Nobody pitches anymore, maybe in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
They went month by month and was like, hey, what are we going to do? Stan Lee did it.
Right.
But now they pitch like whole year arcs.
Yeah,
Marvel Summits.
Marvel, and I think we said this on the show before, when Nick Spencer comes up to Joe Quesada and he says, okay, here's what I want to do with Captain America. I want to make him a Hydra agent. Joe Quesada says, okay, how? And he's like, all right, well, he'll be a Hydra agent since he was a kid. And Joe says, that's a great idea. How are you going to do it? And then he says, here's how I'm going to do it, and here's how I'm going to get out of it. So the next writer who comes out of Captain America gets the toys the exact way that this guy found him.
And that's the thing, you know? Longtime comic fans don't quite understand is that although we have long-running monthly series, which Marvel doesn't even really want anymore.
No, that's why everyone goes, I don't know really anything that gets like up to 50 anymore.
No, well, everything gets rebooted with a number one, which bothers me because I love the history of comics. It's one of the things I love about comics is that I love that Detective went back to like 934 because you can follow a straight line back to the 30s. But Marvel now thinks in terms of creative teams and story arcs. So when you pitch a story, you're pitching a beginning, a middle, and an end. You're not pitching a premise and a direction and running with it the way they used to do in, you know, like the 80s where you just go to Jim Shooter's like, I got this idea for you know, this black costume. And then you go, all right, we'll run it as many issues as you want to run it.
Right.
Now it's like, it's going to be 6 issues. It's going to stop and start. And maybe when things take off, like the Winter Soldier did.
Right.
Maybe by like 7 or 8 issues, they're like, you know what? Stretch it out.
Yeah.
But nobody ever puts out, you're right, no one ever puts out a number one issue and then retracts it in number two.
Right.
It's already drawn.
Yeah, it's done. And that's the thing is, if comics are on schedule, they're 3 months in advance. Every comic is 3 months
in advance. They're solicited 3 months in advance.
Right, that's how far ahead they're solicited. So they already are working on it because it's not just like a writer and an artist. It's an inker, a colorist, a letterer, the editor. It's like they've got to ship it off to the printers. All these things are on schedules at the printers.
This is a problem I had doing indie comics in the 90s was explaining that to the guy who was paying for it. He's like, no, but we put out an issue and we make our money back and then we do another issue. I'm like, we don't have time.
Yeah.
And so I have a series that lasted one issue.
Right.
Because of that.
Because some guy who had a pocketbook had no idea how this shit works.
It also didn't sell.
And that's the thing is that, like, you know, so none of these assholes who like death threatened this writer are gonna apologize to him. You know what I mean?
No, it's they moved on to the next thing.
Right, and it's like, that's the thing, is like, it's so frustrating because it's like, this guy was just doing his fucking job and people couldn't keep their like shit together.
Yeah, I guess, you know, we'll get to a point where you learn to ignore that. I think we're at a point now where we're not able to discern between the credible threats and just the rantings on the internet.
Yeah.
I mean, Dan Slott got death threats for Superior Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And that was a fantastic story, and that was 4 years ago, and he's still on Spider-Man.
Right.
But, like, he had to, like, the FBI had to open a file.
Yeah, and that's what's so crazy is this, like, you know, there's actual honest shit to get upset about in the world, and people are like, they changed Spider-Man. It's like, oh, do you read Spider-Man Monthly? No, but it's you know, the principle of it. And it's
not even the core version of the character anymore.
Yeah.
As much as I hate to say that, you know, there's so many versions out there. We just had Tom Holland as Spider-Man in Civil War.
Right.
When you came over, my son was explaining what was happening on the newest episode of Ultimate Spider-Man, and none of it had any bearing to anything that anyone's done. Like, Morbius was wearing War Machine's armor in this episode.
Yeah, it's just like, it's just...
The internet doesn't lose their mind about that. You know, the internet's not like, Morbius is a vampire and that's the way it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
There are all of these different avenues and, you know, the companies see these as IPs. And it's just like, how can we do a different thing? Going back to the comics, we're going to reboot the comics every time we have a new story.
Yeah, right now, Spider-Man's like closer to Tony Stark than Peter Parker, where he's like super rich and he has his corporation and he travels all over the world. It's like,
and it won't last forever.
Right, it won't last forever, but this reads more like 1970s Iron Man comics than it reads like anything else. He comes up with a new invention. He goes to Paris. He tries it. He gets attacked by
like
a guy.
And now Iron Man's like the supporting character in it.
Right, and it's just like, it's an interesting take. We know it won't last forever. And it's the same thing with Superior Spider-Man. We talked to Joe about it. Joe was really upset about it because the way they advertised it was like, ugh, it sounded terrible.
It was going to be like dark and brooding.
Yeah, like Batman. And it's like, well, okay. And it worked. And I think that's the thing is like, you know, I don't know anyone who reads comics that was genuinely upset about the Captain America thing that wasn't like responding to internet nonsense. Right. I think if the internet didn't make a thing out of it, no one would have cared.
And that issue sold well because of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're beyond the point now where the comics have to change to match the movies. We see little things like that. There's like a Samuel Jackson, Nick Fury. But, you know, I remember after around the time Dark Knight came out, Grant Morrison killed Bruce Wayne, kept him dead for 2 years. And at the time I was like, why would you do that? Because you just had the biggest movie in the world with Bruce Wayne as Batman. And now you can't find a Bruce Wayne as Batman comic book.
Yeah.
Because they realized by that point, people that see the movie aren't going to find a comic book.
Yeah.
It's the people that were already reading the comic book that are going to read the comic book. So while they're already thinking about Batman, let's do something exciting to keep them wanting to buy the comic book. We've given up.
Yeah.
For comic books, you know, we have like 300,000 readers. That's what we got. You know, but we have these characters which make billion-dollar movies.
Yeah, you have to keep them around. And that's, you know, it's like when the X-Men movies came out and the sales didn't translate into the comics like they thought it would. And that was a hard thing I think the comic industry had to learn is that millions and millions of people are going to go see the Avengers Civil War movie, but like a fraction of a percentage of those people are actually going to read the comic. Now, we'll sell that.
Bob Harris actually got fired from Marvel because sales of X-Men didn't go up after the first Bryan Singer movie.
Yeah.
And that's how Joe Quesada moved into the editor-in-chief spot.
Right, and it's like, I'm not a huge Bob Harris fan, but that was probably an unwarranted firing because it's
looking
like... Looking back with what we know now, and I think it's just something where it's... It just doesn't translate. Like you said, 300,000, if like a book sells 300,000, that's the top of the market right now.
We don't have a book that sells out. I think like
Black Panther number one did it, and it made
300,000?
They said it was 300,000 copies of the first issue ordered from Diamond. Wow. So books do it, but it's like, it's a
But number two is not going to do it.
No, no way. And it's a great book. The third issue's out. It's awesome, but it's one of those things where if a book sells 300,000, that's like a huge hit for a book. Like Batman, every month doesn't sell 300,000.
Right.
And that's probably the best
selling. Even with Snyder and Capullo.
Right. And maybe at its height, it did. Maybe one of the Joker issues, I bet. Like Endgame or something. Or not Endgame, the one where he cuts his face off or whatever.
Yeah, Death of the Family.
Death of the Family. One of those. I'm sure the penultimate issue probably sold 300,000. But it's like, that's one of your best selling books in the industry monthly. And that doesn't do 300,000 regularly. It's like the big event books, like Civil War number one probably did 300,000. Even Civil War two probably did.
Right.
But it's like by the time they get to the fourth or fifth one, it'll be 200,000 or 150,000 or something. You know, it's crazy.
Yeah. So the fact that Captain America's Hydra, it had no impact on the Captain America movie that's out now.
Yeah.
That made $1 billion.
Right.
You know, what they do is take some cues from a Marvel story that ran 10 years ago.
Yeah.
But they don't even adapt that.
And that's the thing. It's like there is, you know, people were coming in and they'll ask for, you know, oh, I just saw Iron Man 2. do you have the book that that's based off? And it's like, kind of extremist, kind of, or volume three, I guess.
Three, yeah.
But it's like the...
Two was based on nothing.
Right. There's a lot of times where these movies aren't really based on anything. Like, Civil War is based on Civil War, but like,
but really,
very loosely. You know,
just the idea that there is an issue about... it's not even about secret identities in the movie, like it is.
Yeah, they don't, because none of the Avengers have
secret identities.
It's more about, hey, you guys have superpowers, you need to be regulated like a handgun or something.
Right, yeah, which is kind of interesting. As much as I bought it, it's kind of interesting because in the first movie, they're part of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
And so they were already kind of part of a government
right.
agency, but...
Maybe when S.H.I.E.L.D. gets destroyed and then the Avengers are off doing their own thing... It's like,
yeah, well, we see in Avengers 2 that they're their own thing. Tony Stark is bankrolling it,
right.
And they have no ties to the government anymore. And that's what's getting them into trouble after Age of Ultron.
Yeah.
But just the fact that I thought they summed it up perfectly. I saw it again Friday. It's in the second run theater by us. So I went to see it again. And it is fantastic.
It's awesome.
I love seeing a movie the second time. That's my favorite.
Yeah.
My favorite viewing of a movie is the second time I see it. Because the first time, I spend the whole time going, what's going to happen?
Right.
What's going to happen? And the second time I see a movie, that's removed. I know what's going to happen. So it's like driving a car. The first time you go on a trip, you're looking straight out the windshield because you're like, how many miles do I got to go?
Yeah.
What is the road going to be like? What's the traffic going to be like? When you do it every day, you can look out the side a little bit.
Right. You know where you're going.
Yeah. You can see what's on the radio.
Yeah.
You're not so focused on your primary mission anymore, and you can really enjoy it. And I enjoyed Civil War way more.
I think that's a good analogy because there's a lot of things... I miss a lot of, like, the finer plot details, I guess, or maybe they're just basic plot details and I'm an idiot. But when I see, like, a movie initially, I'm like, all right, what? Like, I'm more so blown away by all the stuff that's happening. It's like, there's the Vision, Giant Man. It's like, Hawkeye shot Ant-Man on an arrow. It's like, Black Panther's great. It's
that
like,
fight really holds up, too. The second time around,
it's good,
it was,
and then you can kind of see all this shit happening in, like, the background and stuff.
Yeah, there's five fights going on at all times. There's, like, usually something in the background.
And that's what's so crazy. That's why I do like it the second time, where you can then kind of figure it out, like, you know, it's, like, all the stuff they're, like, kind of hinting at that they can't really go into. It's like, okay, Vision, like, chess in the comics, so he's playing with the chess piece in this one scene. And it's like, yeah, that's a thing I probably missed the first time around.
Yeah, he's got the sweater vest.
Yeah, he's got like the ascot and the sweater vest on. It's like you can look around at like the background scenery in Wanda's room because it's like, okay, we know where we are now. We know Cap and Wanda are going to have a talk about Sokovia or whatever, and they're going to...
And they can play a little bit with the Vision-Scarlet Witch relationship without actually having to go there.
Right, yeah. It's like, it's subtle.
But then again, as I said, they run their own universe, so there's a Hawkeye-Scarlet Witch relationship because of Age of Ultron.
Yeah.
That's not necessarily in the books.
Well, the... Hawkeye, Scarlet Witch? Oh, yeah,
Hawkeye,
yeah.
Scarlet
where
Witch,
it's
yeah.
like, yeah. And that's, you know, like I said, I think it's something that that's definitely the second time around, I'd say, is like a great experience. But then that movie, then that's the thing is like, we were talking about that X-Men movie, is like, had that come out first and then this, we probably would have liked X-Men a little bit more.
A little bit more, but but then by the time Civil War came back, we would have looked back.
At X-Men and been like,
I
know,
I'm not good. Because I always go on record of like, we all liked Star Trek Into Darkness when we recorded that podcast.
Yeah.
Which is also why we no longer record podcasts directly
after
a movie.
Yeah, the day after.
No, we were in the same mall.
Yeah, we didn't. We went to Smashburger.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. You know what? It's like, this is how you know how we really didn't like Batman vs. Superman. The extended bullshit DVD came out like a week ago or 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, it's streaming now. The disc isn't out yet.
Oh, okay. But we didn't cover that.
know? What I'm hearing so far, and I've read a couple of reviews online, and I'm probably going to end up buying the Blu-ray. Hopefully when it's really cheap. But I have every Batman movie, including Batman and Robin, which I think is the worst movie ever made. So I'm probably going to own Batman vs. Superman. Also, Ben wants to see how bad it is.
Yeah.
But from what I'm hearing about the Ultimate Edition is it does fix a lot of stuff.
Really?
Well, one of the big problems of Batman vs. Superman is that nothing makes any sense.
Right, yeah. It's missing a plot.
Yes. Apparently all the plots in the deleted scenes.
Yeah.
So, like, there's so apparently the Ultimate Edition gives Superman and Batman a reason to fight each other.
Really?
That they don't have at all. They're like, they still resolve it by saying my mom's name is Martha too.
Yeah, I just can't get behind that.
But I'm sort of curious. Just to say, I'm very interested in Suicide Squad.
Yeah, I'm excited about Suicide Squad. I think that I'm hoping that's going to be really good because I obviously want these movies to do well.
I want good DC movies as much as I want good Marvel movies.
Yeah, the movies would be better if they were both good and they were one-upping each other every year.
It's fun to bash them.
Oh, absolutely.
It's so entertaining to talk about what a piece of shit Batman vs. Superman and Man of Steel are.
And it's maybe a tad unfair, but I don't think that any of the criticisms aren't valid. The Martha is... I know some people that like that. I'll give it to them that it's a... Yeah. I'll give it to them that it's a clever thing that I never made that connection before myself.
That's
what I'll say.
Because you know what? I didn't spend a lot of time thinking about Batman and Superman's mom.
Right.
Christopher Nolan didn't even think about Batman's mom, which is one of the criticisms of Batman Begins, is that there's five scenes with his dad, and the mom's just kind of nodding until she gets shot and throws pearls up in the air.
Right. But it's like Martha can't be Batman's kryptonite. That can't be the thing that Batman's like, oh, my powers. It's like, that's essentially what it was in the movie.
Because you know what? The Joker would figure that out pretty quickly.
Yeah.
He's like, and Martha! Oh!
Oh, I can't fight you.
It's like in the Super Friends where they would just take his belt away and he's like, well, nothing I can do now.
Yep, that's it. All my superpowers are in that belt.
There'd always be a Ray that took everyone's powers and then a guy would just come and like unhook Batman and Robin's belt. So it was like, this is your power.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I...
Oh, so yeah, the extended edition. Nick saw it, Nick at Woodridge, and he said it was good. Okay. So...
What did he think about the theatrical edition? I haven't talked to him about it.
I want to say, I can't remember exactly Nick's criticism, but I want to say Nick had a lot of problems with it, but I think overall...
But he didn't hate it?
He didn't hate it. I think he was in the camp of, the guys who liked it. And let's make no mistake, because this is our show, obviously, so it's obviously a little bit biased of, everyone hates this movie. That's not exactly true.
No, and you know...
I have a lot of customers that really like that movie. I have customers that have valid complaints about it, but still like it. I have customers that are stupid excited for Justice League.
We got a tweet the week we did our coverage on it of somebody tweeted, I just listened to two podcasts, one very much against and one very much for Batman versus Superman. And they quoted us in another podcast. So that week there were people recording podcasts going
totally,
it's great.
Yeah. And that's the thing is I think it's definitely not a cut and dry. I do think it's cut and dry that I think it's a shit movie, but I also said that about that movie that everyone loved, the desert driving movie.
Oh, Mad Max.
Right. That so is great. Take it for, a grain of salt or whatever you want to call it. I don't exactly always the thing that everyone likes, and I thought John Carter was a good movie, everyone hated that movie.
I got 35 minutes into it and turned it off because it was on Stars. I didn't pay for it.
Yeah, didn't you like it where it's he was getting punched by the guys who arrested him in the beginning and it was the Breaking Bad guy?
Don't even remember it.
Walter White, he was in it and he was sheriff.
Cranston was in John Carter.
Bryan Cranston's in John Carter. He plays a sheriff or somebody that arrests him. And they keep sitting him down and being like, here's your crimes, blah, blah, blah. And then he'll run and jump out a window. And then they wrestle him back and they sit him down, all right, listen, here's your crimes. And then he headbutts Bryan Cranston and runs away. And then they sit him down again, here's your crimes. And he does another thing.
Well, that's a great,
it was a cool gag.
That's a great thing about Bryan Cranston. He will do anything he thinks is interesting.
He's going to be Zordon in the Power Rangers. Did you hear about this?
Yeah. Well, I saw the meme going around where they had Walter White's head in the,
that glass cone. Tube. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, he'll do that stuff. He was a fantastic Commissioner Gordon voiceover in Batman Year One.
Year One, yeah.
And he still does comedy. Did you see Drive?
All right, is Drive...
The Ryan Gosling.
Yeah, okay, so one of the kids, he's not a kid anymore. He was a kid at the shop for a time, Davis Miller. And now he's a teenager. He's a full-grown adult with opinions and stuff, what I mean? Not to be insulting, happens, I'm just saying, kids grow up and, they start thinking about shit. He was saying that movie was awesome.
It's great.
And my roommate, Brittany, watched, and she's like, yeah, that's a great movie. You'd love it. And it's I've been meaning to watch it on Netflix. I haven't gotten around to it.
It was on Netflix. I'm not sure if it's still there, but Bryan Cranston is in that, and he's a completely different character. And that movie is kind of the tone of Breaking Bad, but actually the character you would think Bryan Cranston is playing, Albert Brooks is playing.
Who's Albert Brooks?
Oh, Albert Brooks is the funniest guy in the world. Albert Brooks was is the voice of Marlin in Finding Nemo and Finding Dory. And he was in the Simpsons movie as Russ Cargill.
What is he? Who is he as like a person?
Does he do any live action?
Yeah,
yeah. Well, he was like this is actually a perfectly timely because he has written, directed, and starred in 7 movies from the 70s until now. And they have all just been released on Netflix. And in fact, Albert Brooks...
Wait, hang on a second. In the 1970s, up until now, he's made 7 movies where he written, starred, and directed in
yes.
them. And then they have never been seen before.
No, 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 no. They were all theatrically released. All right. There were DVDs out there.
I thought you
were
being, this guy was like holding on to these, and then like Netflix became a thing, and he's like, finally, my time has come. This is why I have to be on the podcast, because I'm like the everyman you have to explain all this shit to, because I have no fucking idea what's going on.
So Albert Brooks, you know what? I can turn this into an Albert Brooks podcast in about 2 seconds, because I am devoted to Albert Brooks. Albert Brooks went to high school with Rob Reiner and Richard Dreyfuss.
Okay.
And he is the brother of Super Dave, who's Super Dave Osborne, who's Marty Funkhauser on Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Okay.
The guy with that voice. And then they were both the son of a radio comedian. And he was a stand-up in the 70s. And he kind of came up with Steve Martin. So he was like very absurdist, very weird. He did like the world's worst ventriloquist act, where he like poured water in the dummy's mouth while he sang.
That's actually really clever.
It's really funny.
That's great.
I can show you these clips on YouTube. He did the Tonight Show a lot, and then the first season of Saturday Night Live, they wanted him to be the permanent host before they had an idea of like we'll have a different host every week.
Yeah,
they were like, look, here's the improv guys, and then you be the host, and he wasn't interested in doing a weekly show, but he said, well, I'll make short films. So he made a short film every week for that first year of Saturday Night Live, kind of like the digital shorts now. He kind of took that role, and they were all hilarious. And then he made a movie in 1977, and as I said, these have all just been put on Netflix. Albert Brooks like recorded a video about like that they're on Netflix now, which is hilarious.
Yeah.
And he made a movie called Real Life, which was so completely ahead of its time. It's stunningly insane because the idea of the movie in 1976 was that he would follow a family around with cameras for a year. And he lasts about 2 months before he completely destroys their lives.
And this is... Is it a real reality thing, or is that it's like
no, it's scripted. Yeah, no, yeah, it's scripted. Like Charles Grodin is the dad in the family.
Okay,
that
gotcha.
He's following.
But it's like he was essentially was trying to like invent like reality TV.
He basically did and showed how horrible it was.
Yeah,
and then he made none of these movies were really huge. So he would make a movie every 3 to 5 years, and they're all brilliant. There's a movie called Lost in America where he's a yuppie in advertising, and his wife is Julie Haggerty, who is the girl in Airplane. Okay. And they decide they're gonna quit life, and they sell their house and they buy an RV and they're just gonna drive America for like the rest of their lives. And they immediately go to Vegas and she loses all their money.
Yeah.
And then it's like then the rest of the movie is like how they try to deal with like having nothing.
Right.
And there is one of the funniest scenes I've ever seen in it of they lose all their money in Las Vegas and Albert Brooks goes to the casino owner to get their money back. And the casino owner is played by Gary Marshall.
Okay.
He's like, wow, we don't give money back. No, you give the money.
Right.
And Albert Brooks has that voice that he has in Finding Nemo. He doesn't change it at all. He's like, no, it's a great idea. You give us our money back. It's one of the funniest things I've ever seen. But the movie that really affected me, and I recommend that you just go. I think this is going to be an hour of greatest thing in the world, this podcast.
There it is.
But the movie you should see, and you should see it tomorrow when you're in the shop, is Defending Your Life.
Okay.
Which is one of my favorite movies ever made. I've had the DVD as soon as it was released. I saw it in the theater. And in this movie, Albert Brooks dies within the first 5 minutes. And the entire movie takes place in the afterlife.
Okay. I think we've talked about this before. This sounds a little familiar.
It's great. Meryl Streep is in it.
Yeah.
Rip Torn is in it. And this is the movie that like gave Rip Torn his career back because then they put him on Larry Sanders. And then he got Men in Black. And then he was on 30 Rock. But Rip Torn plays like his lawyer. And they basically, they sit you in a chair in a courtroom and they show your entire life on screen. And then you have to justify whether you're good enough to evolve.
Yeah.
Or just be sent back and reincarnated. And it's absolutely brilliant. Yeah. And then then there's another one in the mid-90s called Mother, where he's like a 50-year-old guy who moves back in with his mom. And his mother's played by Debbie Fisher.
Okay.
Who is in Singing in the Rain and is Carrie Fisher's mom. And she's fantastic in it. Like, there was talk of nominations for her. Then then there's two that aren't that good. There's The Muse with Sharon Stone and Jeff Bridges, which is it's not that good. And then the last one, it really isn't good, called Looking for Comedy in the Muslim World, which was a great idea. Was that, you know, we have such a fear of Muslims in this country since 9/11. He made this in like 2005. And he's like, well, if we could understand what makes them laugh, maybe we would be able to get along. And it would have been an incredible documentary.
Yeah.
And he made it a scripted movie and it goes off the rails. So, but in between, he was in Broadcast News. He's incredible. Broadcast News is an incredible, incredible movie. I think I brought it up. I got the Blu-ray from Criterion. I think I brought it up on the show before, which totally made in 87 with Holly Hunter and William Hurt, who was just in Civil War as Thunderbolt Ross.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And Albert Brooks. And they work for a news organization for DC. And it totally shows where the media is going to go for 24-hour coverage and style over substance. And it shows like the death of journalism integrity in television.
Yeah.
And that was created by and directed by James L. Brooks, who created The Simpsons and did other films like As Good as It Gets, which is one of my favorite
that's
movies.
That's the Jack Nicholson,
yeah,
right?
Jack
yeah,
Nicholson Lisa, and Helen Hunt.
That's like one of Lisa's favorite movies. I used to watch that all the time.
It's a great movie about mental illness.
It is, yeah. he's great in that.
But yeah, James L. Brooks always made these movies that were really funny and really heartfelt, and he brought that to The Simpsons.
Like, yeah.
There's a scene very early in Broadcast News with Holly Hunter giving a speech about journalism integrity, and people are bored and start walking out. And the last time I saw her, I went, oh my God, she's Lisa Simpson. And like her speech is exactly it's exactly like the speech about like global warming that she gives in the Simpsons movie.
Yeah,
where she's doing the Inconvenient Truth and then she's on the chair lift and it breaks and it sends her in the ceiling and then she goes, "Am I getting through to anybody?" And Chrissy goes, "Yeah, we need to do one of those things." but Albert Brooks is incredible in that as a reporter who's feeling his influence like narrowing and tries to become an anchor and he's terrible at it.
Yeah.
But all of these movies are brilliant. And, there's another film called Modern Romance I didn't even bring up, which is all about a breakup. He breaks up with his girlfriend in the first 2 minutes. And most of the movie is him depressed in his apartment.
Yeah.
And trying to get over it with like he buys all this jogging equipment and he runs 50 feet. and he keeps getting back with her and breaking up with her. He's astounding. He wrote a novel called 2030, which is really smart, but he's very much the Steve Martin not enough people know about.
Yeah.
One of the funniest comic minds ever. I had his album, Comedy Minus One, which had a bit about taking an open call for a new national anthem.
Okay.
He's like, we have to write a new national anthem. Nobody sings it on the way to work anymore.
Right.
And he does like 20 characters that come in with different national anthems. But Albert Brooks is a genius. He's been on The Simpsons about 8 times.
He'll be like a character on The Simpsons.
He'll be a character on it. He was like Jacques the bowling instructor in one. And he was like a motivational speaker who yelled at Homer in another. But the biggest one was he was Russ Cargill, the guy who designed the dome.
Oh,
in
the Simpsons movie.
I'm a man on a big TV.
Yeah.
And of course, what everybody knows is Finding Nemo. And I've heard Finding Dory is incredible, but I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, I've heard it's awesome. And it's like one of those ones where it's like all the jokes on the internet that I've seen were like adults being like, all right, we're going to go see this movie. So all you kids shut the hell up because this was our movie. Like, you don't know anything about Finding Nemo. It's like, we saw that when we were kids, that we grew up. It's like, you guys can go see it the second or the third week it's out.
Yeah. Yeah. At some point, I got to take them to it because Pixar makes so many movies now that I'm realizing some of them fly below the radar.
Yeah.
Like, The Good Dinosaur is on demand right now. And last weekend, Renee was away, and I was trying to find stuff for them to do because there's 3 and 9.
Yeah.
So there's not a lot of places we can go where they're both going to be interested. So we were home. I was also exhausted because we played a show Friday night and then we did a podcast. So I saw The Good Dinosaur and I'm like, let's watch this. It's Pixar. And Ben's like, yeah, I already saw it. It's okay.
Yeah.
And I, first of all, I didn't know he'd already seen it. And second of all, like, I never heard anybody talk about it.
Yeah, it was one of those ones where it's like, I didn't know, I heard it was coming out, but I just assumed that so many of these movies are, like, companies trying to do Pixar.
But that was actually Pixar.
Yeah, and it's like, did you guys end up watching it?
No, because he's like, I already saw it and I don't care. We ended up watching Paddington again.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Paddington's fantastic, because Paddington is as British as you could possibly get. Like, the dad in the family, staying with Paddington is the voice of Q in James Bond.
Okay.
And then he stays with the family, and the dad is Hugh Bonneville, the guy from Downton Abbey. And then across the street, their mean neighbor who's trying to, like, get the goods, you know, on this talking bear is Peter Capaldi.
I was going to say, I hope it's Peter Capaldi.
It's Peter Capaldi. And then the woman who's, like, trying to, like, capture Paddington for her zoo collection is Nicole Kidman.
Yeah.
Who's like Australian. That's as non-British as you get in
right.
this. But it's really, really good. We watched that and we watched Mr. Popper's Penguins because it's like, all right, none of us have seen Jim Carrey chase a bunch of penguins around.
Right.
And Carla Gugino shows up in that and I could just stare at her turning slowly 360.
Right.
For like 2 hours.
For 2 hours. That could be the movie.
Yes. In fact, I like Carla Gugino so much that if you mention Sin City, I go, the one where she's naked?
Is she in the first Sin City?
Yeah, she's the one who gets her hand eaten off. And she's completely naked. Yeah, that's the one thing that sticks with me.
Oh,
yeah.
She's the girl that's like the Elijah Wood's creepy little character.
Yes, he eats her hand.
Yeah,
yeah,
okay,
yeah,
she's
like the caseworker helping out Marv.
Right.
And Watchmen, I go, Watchmen is terrible, but Carla Gugino's in it.
Who is she in Watchmen?
She's like the first Silk Spectre. She's like the mom.
Oh.
And she's in aged makeup because yeah. Zack Snyder doesn't know what the fuck he's doing.
Yeah, he's a knucklehead.
Yeah. So that movie's not good. Yeah. Watchmen is where I decided Zack Snyder's not going to help my life.
Yeah, he's not going to make anything better. I'll give him credit for making Watchmen and making it a 2.5-hour movie or whatever it was because it was like considered unfilmable for so long.
Right.
But to call that guy a visionary director is just like a crime. It's
right.
like because it's like Sin City, or not Sin City, 300.
300.
Based off a comic book that he filmed panel for panel. Watchmen, based off a comic book that he filmed panel for
panel.
Dawn
of the Dead remade George Romero's movie.
Yeah, it's like, what has this guy done?
Sucker Punch.
Yeah, a movie that was so dumb. It's like, yeah. Did anyone like that movie?
Nobody saw that movie.
Yeah,
and people
I did,
who did didn't like it. I didn't
like,
see it.
It was so stupid.
Yeah, but but we're at the point now where like Pixar's. So when Finding Dory came out, I didn't get as excited as I was going to. And the Pixar sequels have been good. Monsters University is a lot of fun.
Yeah,
Toy Story. You could argue that each sequel is better than the last
which
movie.
Which is kind of crazy.
And they're doing like, a fourth.
Yeah, I guess they're doing another one. Yeah, Pixar's one of those ones where it's like, I don't see a lot of those, the movies, like, I don't even think I saw Finding Nemo, like, the whole movie. I think I've only seen, like, parts of it. So I know the concept, and I've seen, like...
Oh, really?
Yeah, a lot of, but I don't think I've seen it start to finish. So, like, when this one came out, I was like... Do we really need this? So, like, they did a Cars sequel. It's like, it just...
Yeah, the Cars sequel was the first time, like, Pixar really failed.
Yeah.
Because that I didn't see. We were at someone's house, and Ben was watching it. I glanced over, and I was like, well, I have no interest. I didn't think Cars was very good.
Yeah, it's like, it was like, it just seemed like a weird one to get a sequel, especially since, like, The Incredibles hasn't.
Yeah, The Incredibles is the most ripe for a sequel out of all. And Pixar just announced this week that after 2019, they're not doing any more sequels.
Yeah, so...
And I don't know if Incredibles 2 is in there.
Is in the works? Yeah, so why did they announce that? They just don't want to get bogged down with... all the different things. They want to do new stuff.
I think so. And I think they're getting criticism as like, okay, Toy Story 3, Monsters University, Finding Dory. It's like you used to be the place where that you had these brilliant ideas. This was a studio that not only gave us the first version of all those films, but gave us movies like WALL-E.
Yeah.
Which was, you know, absolutely stunning.
Right.
Or Inside Out, which was really insightful.
Inside Out was the motion one?
No, Inside Out was the one inside the girl's brain.
Yeah, where they were like anger
they were
and all that.
Emotions, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that I did see. And that was one of the, that was probably the last one I saw, I think. And
that was last year. It wasn't that long ago.
Yeah, and it's like, that's what I say, is like they, you know, I'd rather they were coming up with original, I mean, sequels is like, that's like, Pixar's a lot more creative than the idiots in Hollywood who are just like, ah, churn out a sequel. As and I'm speaking as the guy who's like, make 100 Avengers movies.
Yes, and
you know,
we opened this podcast by saying like Civil War, which is Marvel Part 14, is great.
Marvel Part 14, Captain America number 3, Avengers number 3. But that's the thing is like, you know, so it's like Independence Day. I love Jeff Goldblum. I didn't go, and I'm not going to go see that movie because it's...
The first one's a bad movie. We had this argument last week.
Well, I know it's an argument. Now, I'll give it to you that that first one's not like Shakespeare or something. But I'll give it to... I'll say is like, that's a good, bad disaster movie. Do you know what I mean? It's like a good disaster movie, but it's not a great movie.
No, I saw that opening weekend, and I remember calling up my best friend at the time, and I was like, let's go see aliens blow up the White House.
Yeah,
and
that's all you went for. Yeah,
and
I agree.
And we had Elliot here a couple weeks ago talk about that movie, and yes, when the dog jumped out of the way of like the laser blast, when the dog survives the explosion, I was just like, ah, fuck this movie. And then they went on to make Godzilla, which I have never seen.
Is Godzilla the one with 90, Matthew Broderick?
Yes.
That's a great movie. I love that movie.
See, the problem with you...
No, here, let's hear it.
Is that because you're such a millennial, anything in the late 90s is a great movie. Is Batman and Robin a great movie?
No,
that's 1997.
That's a terrible movie.
Okay.
So it's like they're not all great movies. There's just some movies I like that I will defend for the rest of my life.
You know, like, the late 90s, I can pick out two great movies, and then I'm... at least blockbusters. I can only think of two.
Which ones?
Men in Black 1.
Yeah, it was good.
And The Matrix 1.
Yeah, yeah. I haven't seen it
in
a while. And
that's it for the era. That's like it for me. Like past Terminator 2, there's like this wasteland of movies.
Brendan Fraser's The Mummy I liked.
That's terrible.
That was great.
99 is not a good summer because that came out like right around Phantom Menace.
Ugh, really? Yeah, see, that I didn't like when I was a kid.
Matrix,
I liked
but
Darth
Matrix
Maul.
Came out in the spring.
Yeah.
Matrix was like March or April because they didn't think it was going to make that much money.
Yeah, it's crazy. But so that's what I'm saying is like they make Independence Day 2, which is like 20 years later. And it's like, yeah, but fucking why?
I think audiences said that as well.
Yeah, I don't think it did well. It's like they wouldn't let anyone screen it ahead of time.
That's always a bad sign.
Yeah. So I'm hoping like Suicide Squad at least will be.
I'm getting a better feeling about Suicide Squad than. And I'm hoping this is the movie that fixes DC problems because I tweeted this a while ago, but as much as DC wants to tell me that their DC universe started with Man of Steel, it started with Green Lantern. And everything's kind of based on Green Lantern.
Yeah.
And when we have a Justice League movie and we have a new Green Lantern in there, first of all, I think we're probably going to get Jon Stewart. We're not going to get Hal Jordan.
Well, I guess...
Because Ryan Reynolds will still kind of count until we have a new Hal Jordan, Green Lantern counts.
Is your start, yeah.
Yes, because they said from the beginning that Christopher Nolan's Batman movies were not connected to this in any way.
They were completely self-contained.
And now that we've seen Batman vs. Superman, we know that's true.
Right. The Green Lantern's not in Justice League Part 1. They revealed the lineup, and it's like
not Green Lantern.
It's not Martian Manhunter's not in it, and Cyborg is. It's like Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, Flash,
Aquaman.
Cyborg, and Aquaman. I think it's just the six of them.
And when they released their slate of movies, the very last one, which was like 2020, was going to be Green Lantern, and they changed that to Green Lantern Corps.
Yeah, I think it's something where they haven't figured out whether or not to keep Ryan Reynolds, which is stupid. It's like it's. Don't blame that guy for that shitty movie when Deadpool did so well.
Well, I think that's the argument they're probably having at Warner Brothers now.
Right.
I think they were just ready to throw him out and be like, oh, we'll just recast Hal Jordan and that doesn't count. But then Deadpool comes out and it's a hit. And I think Warner Brothers is like, hey, people like Ryan Reynolds. Maybe we should keep him around. But people didn't like that last movie. Let's wait until they've forgotten it.
Right, yeah. Do the sequel so far
Because I was
later.
Excited. It was before we started the podcast, but I was excited about Green Lantern.
Yeah. It was like, I never thought they'd make Green Lantern. I really, really was a huge fan of Green Lantern in like the 90s with like the Kyle Rayner era. And then when Geoff Johns came on, I was
and
like...
And it seemed like it was going to be based on what Geoff Johns
was
doing.
Yeah, and he wrote like a great...
outline.
Script for it or an outline that they didn't
well,
use?
Well, the rumor was that the outline he wrote became the Secret Origins arc
that
in
is,
his
yeah,
comic, which is great. And that introduced Atrocitus.
And Sinestro and him, it's like Training Day in Space.
Yeah, which was the animated movie, which was fantastic.
Yeah, it was a way better Green Lantern
If they had
movie.
Just shot that animated movie,
yep,
live action, it would have been phenomenal.
Yeah, and that's what's so frustrating is, like, that they, you know, now that, so they give him this, like, larger creative role in, like, the DC movie franchise, but it's like, yeah, but you guys didn't listen to him on Green Lantern, so are you going to listen to him finally? Or, you know, it's like, yeah, are you just going to keep doing whatever Zack Snyder wants you to do?
Well, hopefully they fired the guys that weren't listening to him.
Yeah, I hope a bunch of heads rolled after that, because it's like, you know.
And it sounds like they're sitting on Zack Snyder now after Batman vs. Superman, because everybody knows it was a failure.
Yeah.
And you didn't have an easier sell in any movie over the last 10 years. Even Avengers. You had to go and tell people who Thor and Captain America were in their own movies, which did okay. They did like Ant-Man. They weren't huge hits.
Oh, absolutely.
So like even Avengers was not as easy a sell as Batman versus Superman, which has never happened in live action.
Yeah, I don't know if we've talked about it on the show before or if it's something me and Karma have talked about. Like years ago, we were talking about when they were first going to do, after Batman Begins and Superman Returns, they were supposed to be doing a Superman-Batman crossover movie. That's the one that's like hinted at in I Am Legend. It's like a billboard.
Yeah, and even before that,
there was one supposed to be in the 90s.
In 99, when after Batman and Robin had died and they hadn't made Superman Returns.
Yeah.
The last Superman movie had been Christopher Reeve.
Right.
They were talking, Wolfgang Peterson was supposed to make a Batman Superman
movie. Yeah, there was supposed to be one as far back before Christopher Reeve got injured. They were going to do a Superman Batman movie. So, like, that's how long Warner Brothers have been trying to get their shit together. But I'd always said, I absolutely, Avengers is like my number one comic. But even I knew, it's like the Avengers won't do as good as a Superman-Batman movie. I said if when they were doing Iron Man and the plan was to lead up to Avengers, we were like, yeah, that might make a lot of money, but a Superman-Batman movie would just the two of them together does more money than the Avengers.
You don't have to tell anybody who Batman or Superman were.
Right.
I remember when the first Iron Man movie came out.
Yeah, people, and Iron Man is, he's not quite D-list, but he's definitely not A-list. Like, he's had a couple cartoons. Like, he's been around-ish, but it's nowhere near the heights of what Superman and Batman and Spider-Man are.
Comic fans know who Iron Man is,
yeah.
And other people don't. My first exposure to Iron Man were those Marvel superhero cartoons. The ones where they cut the comics and move around. They would rerun those when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And that was the first time I ever saw Iron Man, and I remember making an Iron Man mask and cutting it out of paper when I'm like 5.
Yeah.
So I've always liked Iron Man, but you kind of have to be into comics to know who he was.
Right.
And I remember having an argument with a friend of mine before it came out, and he was saying, I don't think Iron Man's going to make money. And I was like, I was like, well, why? It looks really good. And he's like, yeah, but nobody knows who Iron Man is. I was like, guy builds robot suit. That's all you have to explain to people.
Yeah.
And Favreau did that brilliantly to the point where not only did he make Iron Man A-list, he made Robert Downey Jr. A-list.
Yeah.
Because Robert Downey Jr. had come out of rehab and he was making little indie movies and supporting roles. Like, he was getting noticed for being in Scanner Darkly.
Yeah.
Or having a small part in Zodiac.
Yeah. Like, and now he's like top billing and making a fortune every time he does a Marvel movie.
His face is as big as Captain America's face on the Captain America poster.
Yeah.
That's how big. You know, he made two movies where he was Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah.
They weren't good, but he made them.
The first one was good, I thought.
The problem with those movies, they were kind of silly and fun, but the problem with those movies is once the Benedict Cumberbatch Sherlock came out, you were like, get rid of this thing.
Yeah.
Like, Robert Downey Jr. couldn't come close to Benedict Cumberbatch,
an actual British,
which is crazy because now Benedict Cumberbatch is Doctor Strange, so we're probably going to see Sherlock Holmes and Sherlock Holmes in a movie together when Avengers 3 happens.
We were talking about it at the store after they cast Benedict Cumberbatch as Doctor Strange, and what they need to do is get Robert Downey Jr., Benedict Cumberbatch, and the Hobbit guy.
Oh, Martin Freeman, who is in Civil War for 2 minutes, and he's going to be in Black Panther.
Get them all in the same room. And then somebody says something obvious, and Martin Freeman's character says, no shit, Sherlock. And then Cumberbatch and Downey Jr. look at each other, and then look back at whoever, you know, like, just have a moment to acknowledge it for us, you know?
Yeah.
That would just be awesome.
But then you also have to cast Guy Ritchie as someone.
Yeah.
Just to make that work. And you already cast Paul Bettany as Vision, because Guy Ritchie would have made a great Vision.
Oh, yeah.
But Paul Bettany's really good.
Oh, I think he's great, and I think that's a good way to simplify the nonsense.
Did you ever hear the story about Paul Bettany?
No.
There's a great, great story. In 2007, he was on an audition for something, and they didn't pick him, and
yeah,
they said, you know what? you're done in this town. No one's going to hire you. That's it. He said he was sitting on the sidewalk.
Yeah, he was like on a curb and he was like,
my career's over.
Yeah. And then he literally got the phone call.
And he was like, do you want to do a voiceover in Iron Man?
Yeah.
And then I forget who fought for him. I think it was Joss Whedon. Joss Whedon fought for him, was like, look, we've been using this guy as the voice and he's great. Just dress him up as a Vision and see how it works.
Right. That's awesome.
And Joss Whedon's also the guy that made Chris Hemsworth Thor.
Yeah, it was not only Chris Hemsworth, and he also, Clark Gregg has a career.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? He was just like a bit guy. He was in like 500 Days of Summer. He was like a greeting card guy.
He was on that.
Now he's got his own show.
Well, he was on that Julia Louis-Dreyfus show that was not Veep, which is basically the best thing you could say about it.
Yeah.
New Adventures of Old Christine.
Oh, I never even heard of it.
It ran for like, it was like one of those CBS shows, ran for 5 or 6 years. Nobody watched it and it just kept going.
Yeah.
And, like, I remember being aware that she had that show, and Clark Gregg, like, played her ex-husband in it.
Yeah.
So he was working?
Yeah, oh, yeah, but it's like, he didn't have the career he has now, where it's like,
yeah,
he's the star of his own show.
Of a big hour action show, which, you know, is not the greatest show, and it doesn't get the ratings it did when it started.
Yeah.
But it's still going.
It's
like,
still going.
We're going to season 4.
It's supposed to be, like, not great, but like you said, my roommates are obsessed with it. They watch every season.
I still watch it, and I mostly watch it just to see where the story arc is going.
Yeah.
I find the pace kind of boring, and I find a lot of the characters on it dull.
Yeah.
Like, they just keep doing things with Sky to make me like her, and it's not working. Like, they turned her into Quake, and I'm like, I still don't like you.
Yeah, my roommate is obsessed with her.
And then Agent Ward, they turned him evil, and then they killed him, and they turned him into a zombie.
I was watching, like, I'll catch a episode, like, periodically. I don't watch it regularly. And then I'm like, all right, what happened to this guy? He was, like, stabbed, and he was dead, and then he came back, and he has the memories of Agent Ward in his body, but he's not Agent Ward, and it's like...
Yeah, he's like, I think he's like a Ghost Rider demon. He's a character from the comics that I did not recognize.
Yeah.
He's like Blackheart or the Wraith or something, and like that's how they introduced him, and he took over his body. Apparently, they just like this guy's an actor, so they just keep finding...
Yeah, he's like a regular...
And then Powers Booth became a big villain. He was like one of the guys in the tribunal was like, yes, let's nuke Manhattan.
Yeah, that's the voice of Gorilla Grodd.
Yes, and he was Hydra.
Yeah.
So they do interesting things, and I like Fitz and Simmons. I think they're interesting.
They're great.
I love Clark Gregg. I like Melinda May. But it's one of those shows where I kind of felt this way about Parks and Rec of like, I like half of these characters and I hate the other half.
Yeah, Parks and Rec I actually really like.
I liked it more as it went on. They did a lot to
win. The longer it went, the better it got.
They
like
did
Ron
a lot
Swanson
to win me over.
Part.
There were a lot of characters that were annoying for years, and then they did a lot to soften them and win me over.
Yeah.
And by the end, I really did like it. But for a long time, I was very divided on it.
Yeah.
The greatest thing in the world.
This week, I read Paul Dini's Dark Knight, A True Batman Story, this week, and I was so blown away by it that a friend of mine said, you should try to get Paul Dini on the podcast, and I was way too intimidated to even ask him on Twitter.
Yeah.
If anyone hears this who has a connection to him, we'd love to have Paul Dini on the podcast. I know he does podcasts. He's done the Batman Animated podcast. He's done Kevin Smith's podcast, which in the book he says gave him the idea to write this as a book. Because he told the story. So, but if you don't know, Eduardo Risso drew it. It's an original graphic novel. It's a Vertigo novel, which means it's an adult theme and it does not take place in the DC universe. But it's a true story about how when Paul Dini was writing Batman the Animated Series, in fact, when he was writing Mask of the Phantasm, he was mugged in the street. He was beaten and robbed. And he had to go to the hospital. He had to get surgery. There was like a fracture in his skull. It wasn't quite as dire as it sounded like. He actually went home and he's like, no, I'm fine. And then he went to the doctor and the doctor's like, no, you're messed up. But really what the story is about was how he kind of got back up from that, because he was the emotional devastation of the attack was crippling for him for a while. And he stops showing up to work and he like owes his part of the script to Mask of the Phantasm. The way they did the Mask of the Phantasm script was they took their 5 main writers and they cut it up. And they were like, okay, you work on this 20 minutes of the film.
Okay.
So there's no one writer wrote that movie.
Yeah.
But like, so his scenes were just late and they were starting to give his scenes away and he wasn't showing up. And in fact, he at one point decided he was going to quit Batman because he couldn't write violent scenes anymore. He was supposed to write the scene in Mask of the Phantasm where like Bruce Wayne stops the mugging. You know, where he, like, runs up on the motorcycle, like, in Akira.
Yeah.
And Andrea Beaumont's, like, you know, Bruce, you could have been killed. And he's just, like, Paul Dini was supposed to write that, and he could not write a scene about a mugging.
Yeah.
So he thought he was going to quit. And at that point, this was the silver age of Warner Brothers animation. So Tiny Toons was running. Animaniacs was running. And he came from Tiny Toons. He was a really funny guy. He was thinking of quitting Batman and going back just to like funny comedy, animals. Yeah. Yeah. And I won't give any spoilers away, but a lot of the story is kind of how he saw Batman as important for someone in his situation. And it's very moving. And it's very honest. It's very brave. I mean, he goes into things that don't seem to be about being mugged. Like, he goes into like some of his character flaws, which he thinks contributed to it. Like, he goes into his dating life and kind of like how he was bullied growing up, as much as most of us nerds were.
Yeah.
But it's really bracingly honest. And the art by Eduardo Risso is incredible, because he does a whole swath of tones that all feel like they're part of the same book. You were just looking at it before we recorded.
Yeah, we were flipping through it. It's one of those books where it got announced and we're like, oh, that's a really cool idea for concept. You know, I'm a big Paul Dini fan, because he had done a lot of those. He's the one that does like the big tabloid sized Alex Ross book.
Yes. Yeah. They like, did, I think,
Paul Dini,
five
War
of
on
those.
Crime. Yeah. They did four.
I used to have an Absolute of all of them.
Yeah. I've got the Absolute. It's great. And like I said, Paul Dini's a great writer. Obviously, the TV show is
created Harley Quinn.
Yeah. It's like, this guy's huge. And it came out, and I was like, I just, you know, checked it in with everything else, but it was shrink wrap, so I didn't really flip through it. And I like Eduardo Russo's book, or his work, from like 100 Bullets. He did. The guy's just got like a style like nobody else. He's like one of those criminally underrated guys. And slipping through this hardcover, and it's just like, just being able to see the pages, it's like, yep, done. I'm getting it. It's like, you can tell enough by looking at a comic now, based on who's doing the work, that it's like, yep, that's absolutely worth getting.
Yeah, I got it from In Stock Trades, which you always tell me to get it, because their discounts are better than yours.
Yeah, I can't afford... I've considered buying stuff from In Stock Trades to put in our store. That's how good their discount.
Yeah, it must be volume.
It absolutely is. They're buying like pallets of this stuff, where I'm getting like two.
Yeah, so know? I also got, and they have a deal where they give us no money. I think they sponsor John Sumter's podcast, but I'm going to plug them anyway.
Yeah.
But if you spend over $50, you get free shipping. So I also got the third omnibus of The Goon.
Oh yeah, that's another good.
The Eric Powell books and the artist books, The Legends of the Dark Knight. I got the Don Newton book, who was a really great artist who passed away suddenly. But he did a lot of Batman and detective books, like pre-crisis, early 80s. And I have all the issues, but I was like, you know what? Let me get this. I'll hit my $50. I haven't touched either of those books. But as soon as I opened the box, I was reading the Paul Dini Dark Knight.
Yeah.
Because I'd heard so many great things about it. So, yeah, I think it's going to win an Eisner.
That's awesome.
It's that good. I really recommend anyone. Even if you're not a comics fan. I was talking to someone I know who's a therapist who wants to put it in her office.
Yeah.
You know, to deal with trauma. And, you know, I've shown it to like parents. And I think it's a book that if people come to it from a lot of angles, it's going to really help a lot of people.
I'm going to have to stop at the shop and tell Lisa about that. I think she'd get a kick out of that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's a lot. It's very close to the work that your sister does.
Yeah, that's what she's doing.
Yeah, and she's a Batman fan.
Yeah, and Paul Dini fan, obviously.
Yeah.
So this week's been weird. I haven't, like, been outside or...
It's been nice out.
Well, it's been nice out, but I don't think I've, like, done anything but just, like, work and sit in this room and draw this fucking comic book I'm trying to finish. But I flipped through two things recently I haven't looked at in a long time. And the first thing is Geoff Johns did a run on Avengers. And I'm like, okay, so it fits in between, like, Busiek and Perez's run and Bendis's run, which kind of, like, tears the team apart.
Yeah, and it wasn't that big a run, and he ended up going to DC right after.
Yeah,
it,
he goes to DC pretty quickly, and it's a great run. He does, like, maybe 20 issues, and then he did, like, a short Vision miniseries. It's like, this should totally be an omnibus. It's like, it'd be a smaller one, maybe 24, 22 issues or something like this. But just a really, really cool run, and it's like Geoff Johns, it makes his Justice League run much more disappointing. Because he did this Avengers run like 10 years ago, and it shows that he knows how to handle a team book. And he does Justice League, and it's just kind of like nothing really cool happens. Do you know? It's like the Avengers spend half the time not even fighting bad guys. They do like all this other cool stuff. And it's just like really kind of disappointing to now to remember how good that was and then look at his Justice League and be like, he has no idea how to put these characters together.
Yeah, I think the problem with Justice League is that people always think the glory days of the Justice League are the big cosmic events that draw everybody in. Everybody's kind of trying to write crisis in the Justice League. And partially I think it's because most of the team, unlike the Avengers, has their own books.
Right.
So it's like, well, really, what am I going to say about Batman that's not being said in four of his books?
Right.
So it's like, let's lean on having Darkseid control the universe or upending everything and turning everyone into bizarros or evil versions.
Yeah.
And I never thought any of those stories were very good. My favorite run on Justice League is Justice League International.
Yeah.
Which is all about the characters.
Right. And that's the thing is this, like, I think it's something where it's like, I think team books are tricky, but I do think it's something where it just shucks. It shows he could do it. And I'll grant you that Justice League is a much more powerful group of characters. And every single one of those characters has their own book. You know, Avengers has the benefit of being essentially like a B-list group of characters working together.
Or it's almost like X-Men, where the most popular guy has his own book, and that's about it.
Right, like, and this Captain is before the movie and all that stuff, too.
Right, you have Captain America, Iron Man, and Thor. They're always called the big three because they were the three guys who could sustain
their own monthlies, yeah. So I was flipping through those. I've got the hardcovers for that. That's really good. And the other thing I was flipping through this week, which we probably have talked about before, is Earth X by Alex Ross and
John Pollyon.
John Pollyon does like the actual artwork in it, and somebody else helps Kruger.
Kruger, yeah. Kruger helped with
Ross write it.
He helped write Justice as well.
Yeah, and he's great. And that's another one of those books where it's like the amount of puzzle pieces that they work together to explain the Marvel Universe. It doesn't really work now because like all the stuff that's happened in comics since then, but in continuity when that book came out, it was kind of this like perfect, beautiful love letter to the Marvel Universe. And there's a lot of deep connections they make. It's very like continuity heavy. If you don't know a lot about the Marvel Universe, it's like a hard book to recommend if you don't know who pretty much everyone in the Marvel Universe is. If you're like a regular comic fan that reads Marvel and you know who all these characters are, I recommend it. If you're looking for a graphic novel and you have just seen the movies, you're going to have no clue what's going on in this book.
That's how I felt about Squadron Supreme.
Yeah.
Like I finally read that 10 years ago, and it was coming out when I was a new comics fan because it came out right around the same time.
Straczynski's?
No, Grinwald's in the 80s.
Oh, yeah. I just got the omnibus for
that. It came out right around Secret Wars.
Yeah.
So I was just getting used to Marvel Universe, and I remember picking it up, and I'm like, I don't understand any of this because it's the Marvel Universe talking about the DC Universe.
Right.
So some books you kind of have to be a veteran comic fan for.
Yeah, and there are stuff like that. And those books, like I said, it's kind of like the deeper you get into comics, the better some of those books become or the better they can be. It's just unfortunate. It's like this beautiful, beautiful book that is, it's like criminally underrated because it's like, it's just deals with kind of everything. It's like there's a very small percentage, I think, of comic fans that are, I'm sure I'm not getting all the references in this book. That's how deep it is. You know, and it's like, I've researched all this shit because I've got like free time at the store, and I'm like, wait, what happened with the Squadron Supreme in the 1970s? Like, fuck do I know?
Right, but you know, but now you won't have any free time because you need to watch 7 Albert Brooks movies.
Right. Are they store appropriate?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, awesome. I believe they're all PG. All
right, cool.
Yeah, there's certainly no nudity, no violence. I don't think there's even really cursing in it.
Yeah, all right.
So, either real life or defending your life. You know what? I'm going to squeeze that in. It's my greatest thing anyway.
There you go.
That, and I've been rewatching the Peter Capaldi Doctor Who. That last season is great, and I love Doctor Who again, and I think I'm going to have to spend more money on like Big Chief 12-inch figures of Doctor Who. But you can follow me at Not On My Book on Twitter. That is the Caffeinated Comics feed. You can follow us on Facebook. That is the news feed for Caffeinated Comics. We're usually posting there. And you can like us on iTunes. You know what? We haven't gotten a review on iTunes in a long time. If you want to be that person, you be that person.
Make it happen.
I tell you this. If you leave us a review on iTunes and you put your real name, we'll mention your real name. And say, look, this guy gave us a good review. And even if it's terrible, because then we will rebuttal it.
Yeah.
And Steven?
You can always find me at 19 South LaGrange Road in LaGrange, Illinois.
Caffeinated Comics is a Not In My Book production.
Take that, meatball!